I bid you welcome.
God, I'm
here. We all go a little mad sometimes.
We accept a one of us. We accept a one of us.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Wolfman's got nard.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Home is Where the Horror Is. I'm your host, Brian.
And I'm Monica.
And we welcome you to our little home of horror. So, this week, it's going to be Monica's pick once again. But before we get into it, into her picks, we should mention last week, we actually did a recap of some horror movies we got to watch, and we were really busy this past week.
Yeah, we really haven't had time to do anything.
Yeah, so hopefully by next week we can recap some other fresh horror movies we're doing. But what are we going to be looking at today?
So today's movie, since we're getting into the Halloween season, which is our favorite holiday, I'm going to start off with Sleepy Hollow.
Nice, nice. Yeah, this has been one of my favorite go-to fall slash Halloween movies for a while. So what are we talking about for myths and places?
We'll get to that as we get along. There's going to be a running theme. So
okay.
Yeah.
You don't like spoilers, do
no.
you? You know me. I like my spoilers. All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Sleepy Hollow?
Okay. So Sleepy Hollow was directed by Tim Burton, which, just to give you a heads up, I'm pretty sure there's going to be several other picks that I'm going to have by Tim Burton, one of my favorite directors.
I guess it should be noted for anyone who maybe lives under a rock or isn't into most movies, he's most notable for Beetlejuice, Nightmare Before Christmas, Sweeney Todd, Frankenweenie,
Edward Scissorhands.
The Batman Returns. The list goes on and on.
Yeah. So this movie was released in 1999. And was actually based on a short story by Washington Irving called The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
So. Yeah, pretty infamous as far as American literature and especially early horror literature in America. Him and obviously Edgar Allan Poe were some of the earliest ones to adopt like a gothic running theme. The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, it's something that, like, I feel like we all know. And before this movie, and aside from the book, the only other thing I could think of is the old Disney cartoon where it was The Adventures of Ichabod, which is tied to that. I don't even know what the hell the first part is because I skipped through it, but something of Mr. Toad. I forget that first half, but that was always, like, my reference point for this until this movie came out.
Yeah. And then afterwards, there was a show for a while, Sleepy Hollow, which was on, like, network TV.
Which, of course, you watched.
I watched. I did. I enjoyed it. I did.
Because eventually you're like, I don't know about the show. Okay, well, it's grown on me. Now the lead's kind of hot after I see him in 25 million episodes.
That's always the case.
That's always the case with you.
Just like with The Office. Do you think Jim's cute? Nah. By the end, oh, Jim's so dreamy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So there's three main characters in this movie. There's a lot of famous people in it, and a lot of them are people that when you see them, you're like, oh, I know that guy. You might not know his name, but you know you've seen him in a lot of movies. But the three main characters, one is Johnny Depp, which is pretty much in almost every Tim Burton movie. Like, he's
the go-to.
In a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he plays Ichabod Crane. Christina Ricci plays Katrina Von Tassel. And although you don't see who it's supposed to be for the majority of the movie, the Headless Horseman is played by Christopher Walken. So, and I always forget that, like, when we watch it, because there's only, like, one or two scenes that you actually see Christopher Walken.
It is such an odd choice, but honestly, in those few moments we do get of him as the Headless Horseman with his head on, he kills it.
He does.
And I know we'll get to the scene at the end, but there's something about Christopher Walken. Like, even when he's and he is intimidating.
Yeah.
There's something that makes you laugh about just the looks he gives, because you can like imagine his voice. Like, he doesn't speak in this movie.
No.
But you can imagine his voice, like what he's actually thinking in his voice as you watch it. It's just, it's a great choice. But babe, I do want you to tell the people, what'd you ask me while we were watching a movie? What'd you ask me?
I don't want to say.
Say it. Come on.
Well, I just wasn't sure. Was he under the costume the whole time, or did they have like a stunt guy riding around on the horse?
It was, and I had to say, it was definitely a stunt guy doing all the sword play, the horseback riding. I don't think Christopher Walken is at a point in his career where he would have done that. So, yeah.
You never knew.
It was adorable.
So, just a quick like overview of the movie. So, Ichabod Crane is a constable in New York City, and he is sent to the town of Sleepy Hollow to investigate a series of murders that are being committed by the so-called Headless Horseman.
Yeah, and when he gets sent there, they don't tell him that piece. They just tell him there's been three murders, all with decapitations, mm-hmm. and they establish very early he's a man of science.
Yes.
Like, he's gotten, it's the turn of the century. Was he here? 1799, right?
Yeah, so it does take place in 1799.
So right there, it's you know, well into the Industrial Revolution, kind of the big break on science is happening around the world, and particularly he is obsessed with medical science and trying to find true justice for things such as, how was someone actually murdered? How did they die? And stop using crude old punishment techniques. And yeah, once he gets to town, as Monica said, right away he's greeted with this myth of a headless horseman, which right away he just thinks is bullshit. So before we dive into some of the more specific scenes we want to talk about, I did want to mention that, and I've said this to you I don't know how many times while we were watching, I absolutely love the set design in this film. Like, so many shots in this movie could be art pieces, and some of them kind of look like some of the things we have hanging around the house.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Burton really is great with that. Like I was even saying, like with the Sweeney Todd and everything like that, like all the buildings and like everything just looks so authentic, and it's really good.
Yeah, and his stylized cinematography. I mean, the movie is very gray.
Yeah.
And the main colors that shine throughout any scene is always red, whether it's blood or like some color, like the cardinal is always shown in this film. And then the orange of the jack-o'-lanterns. Mm-hmm. And man, this movie likes fog too.
It does. And it sets the tone. Like, it really does. Like, because even in like the opening scene, you see the fog, you see the corn, there's even a scarecrow, and you know, that is really reminiscent of like the Nightmare Before Christmas with the pumpkin head, and they're traveling in a coach, and the passenger hears a noise and then pops his head out, and the driver's headless. So he bails out of the coach and runs through the corn, and guess what? The horseman catches up to him and takes his head too.
Yeah, so two things you just mentioned. First, I do think that scarecrow was almost identical to the Jack Skellington at the beginning of that Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
But also, we should mention, I guess we'll just say the number now. Okay. So I had said to Monica, because we take notes while we're watching these films, I was like, we should keep count of all the on-screen decapitations, because he did technically kill one additional person that we didn't count, and we assume that it was headless. Well, we know it was a headless, but how many on-screen decapitations did you get?
There were 16.
That's a pretty, for a movie that was in major theaters, it was, you know, a big budget flick. That's a lot of,
that
has to be the most decapitations. And quite honestly, I mean, I know there's probably some super obscure horror movies out there. It's got to be some of the most decapitations in a horror movie, too. Like, I mean, he just goes for the head. mastermind out of the gutter.
So, you know, then we go to the scene. Ichabod is with Christopher Lee, and he's telling him about these murders that are happening in Sleepy Hollow, and he has to go investigate.
Yeah, a little fun fact. So Christopher Lee, if you're, you probably, he's one of the guys that Monica probably mentioned. If you're not a nerd like me, you might not know. He was from the horror, like the Hammer horror films. So all the Dracula films, he was Frankenstein, the Mummy. But also he was in Star Wars as Count Dooku. And he was, I mean, he was in Gremlins 2 as the evil scientist. So he has a long history of being in horror movies. But if you notice in the one shot, he has the eagle behind him and they place his head right in between the wings. And I can't help but feel like that's an old homage to him being Dracula and like being a bat. Mm-hmm. So that's something I just always looked at. I was like, that's pretty damn cool. And I know how Tim Burton is.
Yeah.
He loved the Hammer horror film. So, yeah.
Yeah. I did like catch on there. There's a few things I'll mention a little bit later that do kind of tie into some of his other movies.
Yeah.
So basically Ichabod gets to Sleepy Hollow. He starts to investigate, starts talking to people, and they keep telling him about this headless horseman. So of course he really doesn't believe it at first. And basically the story of the horseman is he was a Hessian, which was a soldier. He used to decapitate people in battle. He was hiding in the woods from a group of soldiers, and there were two young girls that he came across. And, you know, he put his finger up to his mouth and quiet. And one of the girls broke a stick, giving off his location. So he was captured, and he was decapitated, and his body and his head were thrown in a grave. Now, this was back 20 years prior, so now we're looking at 1779. So once Ichabod starts investigating the one, I forget the guy's name who told him about that there was four graves, but there's five bodies.
The magistrate.
Yeah.
I could not for the life of me, even if I try to take notes, the names you're going to hear over and over, Van Tassel, Van Garrett. It's like this whole town. As Monica said, when he shows up, there's these main group of guys, and I could go through each one of them, but they are character actors and pretty serious actors that have been in many things, and they're the town elders. They're the magistrate, they're the town pastor or reverend, they're the treasurer, and I believe the notary. And essentially, like, you know, there's a plot going on there, like, and they're always meeting, arguing,
yeah.
And Johnny Depp's character is picking up on this, but, you know, there's also, there's just like, you know, this belief, and as the viewers, we know that the horseman's real, but Johnny Depp is just, once again, he's concluding, like, there could just be a human behind this one way or another, until, I guess, well, we'll save that. But I do want to mention, does it feel like throughout the movie, and Tim Burton always does this, all the characters have a bit of a overacting tone? Like, it's playfully done. Like, they're serious.
Yeah.
But there's always, like, funny. Like, almost every scene has a bit of a funny.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, hint.
Like, when
to
he's
it.
Getting squirted with the blood, like.
Oh, Johnny Depp gets squirted with blood in his movie. Like, let. From things that there's no reason blood would be squirting, like corpses.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Johnny Depp especially, that's Ichabod Crane's character, and he did a great job. But like when he's like talking to the guy, and he's walking behind him, but then he pops his head back in real quick. Like it's just funny little scenes that, I think it goes along with the playful attitude of most Tim Burton films. Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed, like the bridges that they have, the way they're constructed, that reminded me of the bridge in Beetlejuice.
Yep.
when they the one that they drove off of,
yes,
and before they died. Yeah, so that's one of the things that I picked out,
which is tied to a little fun fact that's tied to, you know, like Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. All those, So Tim Burton based all those designs on the old German Expressionist films, and more importantly, like Dr. Caligari's, or The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, or any of the old German films I try to get you to watch, but you refuse because they're in black and white. All the architecture is twisted in such a way because it's supposed to represent a very surrealist, dreamlike thing.
Gotcha.
So if you notice in a lot of Tim Burton's films, architecture is slightly tilted, like you said, in Beetlejuice
Yeah.
and Edward Scissorhands, like there's a lot of rooms or doors that are a little off
Just a little
kilter.
off, yeah.
So that's a nod to those films.
So there's one scene where Johnny Depp is, walking and he hears a noise as he's going over to the bridge, and then all of a sudden he sees like the horseman and it starts chasing him, and he's running and running and running. Now he's walking through the he's running through the corn maze that and you see the horseman coming up behind him and throw a pumpkin, and the pumpkin's flaming, and it's just, that classic, the legend of Ichabod. And it winds up not being the horseman. Casper Van Dien is
Who is Bron Bohm's, and I guess it's important to note the reason Brahm is doing this to Ichabod, and they played it down a little bit in the movie, but the classic story is that Brahm is trying to I guess go out with Katrina.
Katrina.
And Ichabod kind of stumbles in there, and she's intrigued and kind of flirts with him and
Yeah.
likes him. So there's a little bit of a love triangle, like rivalry going on
Yeah.
between Brahm and, but in this one, honestly, Johnny Depp isn't really engaging her that much. She's more chasing him.
Yeah.
Whereas in the story itself, like Ichabod is definitely way more, I think he's trying a little
A little
harder.
harder.
But yeah, so they had to add in that classic scene. And the jack-o'-lantern looks
It
amazing.
is. It's like almost 3D. Like it would be great if it was in 3D.
Yeah.
So there is a scene though where he is being chased. He's talking to the magistrate, and the horseman comes and is running behind the magistrate, decapitates him, and it's great. The head, you see the head start rolling. It winds up landing between Ichabod's legs, and he's like looking down at this face, looking up at him, and then turns back around, the headless horseman, and he just stabs it right in the head. Yeah.
Yes. And I'll give Johnny Depp's, I mean, Ichabod's character, like, he deducts a lot from the crime scene of the first headless horseman when he arrived, of the first victim.
Yeah.
Like, he figures out, okay, something came back, got the head,
Yeah.
and did it exactly how you describe. And also, when the wounds are cut, they're cauterized, they're like basically sealed shut, like they're cauterized with flaming hot steel, but there's nothing. There's no scorch marks, there's no blistering.
Yeah.
So essentially, like, and that's when the magistrate says, like, hellfire
Yeah.
or whatever. And it intrigues John because he ends up seeing other bodies that and all have this same
The same
thing.
thing.
So you he starts, I think, slowly believing like there's something more magical
Yeah.
here that he can't quite figure out.
Yeah, and then once, once this happens, he's like, there's a headless horseman, there's a headless horseman, and everyone's like, that's what we've been telling you this whole time. So, but when the horseman comes back, takes the head, he winds up passing out. And when he passes out, he starts having a dream. And you'll notice, like, when he has his dreams, like, they're much brighter. Like,
Yes.
everything's very illuminated. And he starts to have dreams of his mother. So apparently his mother was like, she was drawing this symbol by the fireplace, so we assume she's some type of witch. And then we see her being taken, and then a door opening, and then you see like almost like a torture chamber, and you see like an Iron Maiden at the other end of the room. So, but then he does wake up, and now he wants to try to investigate. So he winds up in the woods, and he comes across this woman in a cave. And she's got a veil on her face, so you really can't tell what she looks like. And she chains herself up, and she keeps saying, be quiet, don't talk, don't move when the other comes. So you're like, who is this other?
And we should mention that this whole cave, and when we already said these sets in this movie are great as is. But this witch's cave is done really well.
Yeah.
And this is the point of the film where Depp is really buying into the magical. As he said, he knows there's a headless horseman, but he's still convinced that someone is controlling him. Because he gets clues that
the horse... he does get those clues from this woman. So after she like makes this little spell and breathes in the smoke and kind of like it looks like she passed out, all of a sudden she pops up and you see snakes coming out of her eyes and her mouth, and she jumps on Ichabod and basically tells him that you have to go find the horseman's grave. So at this point he starts going through the woods. And they come to this awesome shot with this big, twisty, gnarly bear tree. And it's, you know, a black tree. And you have all the smoke and the fog and everything. And it really does look very intimidating. So he goes over and he touches the tree and it's leaking blood.
Yeah.
So that's when he goes. He gets his hatchet. He starts hitting it. And again, like we were saying, just the ridiculousness. The amount of blood that just starts getting squirted on him over and over again is just
crazy. Yeah, and he cuts through and eventually reveals, like, within the tree are all the heads of the victims, of the horsemen. And as he sees, apparently this is the spot where the horseman was buried, which is interesting because Monica said this was only 20 years.
Yeah.
So part of the lore of the horseman is he's connected with the devil. He's basically a demon to a degree. And this tree represents, as we see in this scene, like the horseman is summoned and like basically materializes from the tree with his horse. So it's like a portal to hell, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah. So they do dig up. They do find his actual grave. And when they do, they find the horseman's body. But his head is gone.
Yeah, and he noted that the ground was already disturbed. Somebody had clearly come and done this.
Yeah.
And we should mention, as we said, with the group of, like, town elders, they are slowly getting picked off. And there's other people getting picked off. And while Johnny Depp is kind of running around, he's getting information from various people. And he's piecing it together like, more and more.
Yeah.
And it just becomes, like... You do get a little bit of a, you take your mind out of the surrealness of the Headless Horseman, and it becomes a little bit of like a crime drama, because you're following along, you're like trying to figure out like, well, who could it be? Like, what's going on?
So, you know, after they dig up the grave and find out that the head's missing, and they're back in the town, there is a scene where Ichabod and Brahm are there, and you see the Headless Horseman coming, and he's coming after somebody, and Brahm gets his swords and he's like, I'm gonna
first he shoots his ass off the horse, because Brahm actually sees him murder the guy. The horseman does an art decapitation. Brahm sees this, he pulls out like his scoped musket and takes the horseman off the horse, but even then the horseman kind of doesn't care. Like, he doesn't give two shits. The horseman's just leaving. Brahm is insistent he's gonna take down the horseman. And pretty quickly Johnny Depp, like, I mean, the horseman even stabs Brahm in the leg just to kind of like say like fuck off, but Johnny Depp comes up and he's like, hey, like, he's not after you.
This is the point where he realizes for sure, like, okay, the horseman isn't just attacking at random. He's got a list of people he's going after. And if you're not on the list, he really doesn't care. Like, you know what I mean? Even we saw, like, he was provoked by Brahm, and initially he was just like, whatever. And it wasn't until Brahm kept at it that he killed him. But did you notice he didn't decapitate him?
No.
He didn't take his head.
He split him right in half. And Johnny Depp, like, joined in the fight a little bit, but got stabbed in the shoulder and like this weird like flip move with the shoulder over. But like, it's one of those situations where you know for sure, okay, Johnny Depp's right. This thing is on a mission, and, you know, kind of this is where it dives real deep into, I think we complete the idea of his dream.
Yeah.
Because we find out exactly what happened with his mother.
Yeah. So after he gets, you know, Johnny Depp does get stabbed by the horseman, like in the shoulder, like you said. And again, he falls back into that dream state. And now he's getting a little bit more in depth with the dream with his mother. So we find out that it's actually his father who
was a reverend or either a reverend or something religious or just deeply religious.
Yeah. And he is the one who took the mother because she was practicing witchcraft. And, you know, she was in the Iron Maiden. And you see young Ichabod going into the torture chamber and seeing his mother. Now, at the very beginning of the movie, you see Ichabod look at his hands and he's got all these little holes all over his hands, but he doesn't remember how they got there, like where they came from. So during his dream, he remembers when he sees his mother being tortured, he like leans back onto like a bed of spikes and basically
chair spikes, and so, his mother, because the Iron Maiden popped open and his mother poured forward with blood, like almost, you know, the only time he didn't get squirted with blood when there was a pool coming towards him.
Which did that remind you of anything?
The Shining.
That yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But one thing you did say, so you said his mother was practicing witchcraft. She really wasn't. That was his point. Like, it showed what she had been drawing, and all she was drawing was like trees and a star and the sun in the fire, in the hearth. So, you know, the father just saw that, and then she was like burning incense or sage, or she was burning something. But, you know, this deeply religious guy just basically like, it's witchcraft. Yeah. So that's what drove Depp's whole career and life to say, I'm someone of logic.
Yeah.
Like, I need to prove that, like, these kind of things shouldn't happen. And, you know, so he's fighting this urge to accept this magical being. And Katrina, the whole time, she's almost doing things exactly like his mother did.
Yeah.
Like, she's a white witch in a way, like casting protective spells under his bed. So he's like kind of being around her is what's allowed him to remember these repressed memories of his mom dying, his hands, and all that.
And did you notice, so with his hands, the one thing I picked up on, so, you know, he was a child when he injured his hands and everything. When they actually show them, they don't look like healed scars. Did you notice that they look like tiny little black holes, but they're in like a pattern?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a condition called trypophobia, which is the fear of holes. Because I think American Horror Story, they had something on like that before. So, like, they really did play that up, like, you know, throwing in one of those things in there. Like,
yeah.
You know, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they didn't look fully healed. They still did look very, very much like holes. And even when he wakes up from the dream, they're bleeding a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, at this point, you know, he fully understands. And I guess to sum up without going into great detail, he gets enough information. Like, it's that perfect moment in the movie. He's got all the clues.
Yeah.
He thinks he has the exact person, which just so happens to be at the moment, he thinks it's Katrina's father.
Katrina's father, yes.
Because he's the one that stands the most to gain in this town, basically be the most powerful, have the most wealth. It all makes sense.
Yeah, because there was, like, land and property was in the will and testament, went down to this person. Well, this person died, so now it goes down to this person. And it was, like, three or four people down that winds up being Katrina's father. So Ichabod actually confronts Katrina about that. And she's like, no, you're wrong. My father would never do that if you knew him like I did. And did you notice that every time the horseman is coming, you see lightning.
If you notice, the storm is coming.
Yeah, like the storm is coming. You always see, like, in the distance, you see like thunder and lightning, and then that's when the horseman emerges.
I did notice the fog definitely coming. I didn't, but now that you mention it, I'm thinking about the scenes and it makes sense. But in one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, the whole town knows the horseman's coming. And they're all gathering in the church. Like, you got, I don't know, roughly maybe, let's call it 100 people. But it's the whole town.
Yeah.
Horsemen's coming towards the church. All these people are, like, barring the doors, getting at the windows, starting to shoot at them. And real quickly, Johnny Depp realizes, oh, the horseman can't cross because it's hollowed ground. Mm-hmm. And he even throws this axe. It disintegrates. So you know, while that's going on, the subplot of who's actually, like, behind all this shit, there's, you know, the Reverend killing the one guy. Oh, I guess we should mention, well, we'll get to that. But the father, it becomes very clear, he's not the one. He's mm-hmm. trying to figure out still, even the father's like, there's a plot going yeah. on, and I'm going to figure it out. And he kills, like, the Reverend, and he's climbing these stairs, and it's a big climactic thing. But all of a sudden, you see the horseman, he's, like, taking the post fence off, or the fence post off, and he's tying a rope to it. You're like, what's going on? And damn, does he got an arm, because yeah. he impales his ass through the window, yanks him out. And it's kind of funny because, like, the camera angle is, like, on the guy being dragged, and you see his face kind of like, and his head gets pulled right up to the fence line, just close enough for the horseman to collect his debt.
Yeah. And then you see they do have a scene where apparently the stepmother was killed. So you see the stepmother in the garden, and then you see the horseman coming up. So someone tells her, your stepmother's dead. So now she's the last living heir. So we come to find out.
But there's one little caveat there.
Yeah.
The reason that's ensured that they think she's dead is because she has a cut on her hand.
Yes.
And
yes.
How did she get the cut on her hand?
She was having sex with the Reverend. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because, yeah, Johnny Depp goes back in the woods to follow somebody leaving the house, like, shrouded in hood. So yeah. We're not sure who it is. And Johnny Depp comes up to a scene, and it's, you know, the Reverend going to town on the stepmother of Katrina. He doesn't say nothing. And the next day, she even shows him her hand. Like,
why didn't you ask? Yeah.
So she knows he knows, because she saw him.
I think that was more like, oh yeah, you've seen the cut on my hand. Because when they find the body that they assume is the stepmother, there's a cut on the hand.
Yep.
So, you know, he's not questioning it because, well, it's the cut on the same hand.
Yeah.
So now everything's left to Katrina. Katrina's the last, you know, living heir. So she gets everything. She gets the land, she gets the money, everything like that. But then Ichabod, like, has this idea, like, something's not sitting right. So he actually goes and he checks the body. He mm-hmm. runs to, like, their little morgue, looks at the hand, and realizes that the cut was inflicted post-mortem. There's, like, no pooling of blood, like, nothing has clotted, and he's like, this is a fresh cut, you know, there's no way this was done, like, a few days ago.
Yeah.
So then he quickly realizes that this body is not the stepmother. Mm-hmm. It's the stepmother who's...
Yeah, and she pops out, Katrina passes, everyone's passing out in this goddamn
room. Yeah, yeah.
She passes out, and you wake up, and the stepmother gives the full reveal. She shows why she plotted, and the easiest, simplest is essentially Katrina's family, you know, had taken the farmland and the house that this woman was living in with her sister, shortly after the mother died, and it turns out the witch in the cave is her twin sister.
Who she winds up killing.
Who she killed. And her grand plot was always to get back at this by seducing Katrina's dad and becoming this heir to kind of, like, get back at everyone. That's the only part. It's, like, an interesting plot. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm like, so really your whole drive for bringing back this crazy headless horseman is money and power.
Yeah.
Like, and it's revenge.
Yeah.
But
we'll also remember, you know, the one thing you didn't mention is her and her sister, they're the little girls from the beginning yes. of the movie. So, yes. And she even said, like, when she saw, like, she was making it up to the horseman for getting him killed, yeah. basically.
And in a scene that it's still... doesn't make sense to me. I said this to Monica. We know that this woman is capable. She killed her sister. She killed the handmaiden that she plotted against. And she even did with decapitations on both of them. She has Katrina knocked out. She brings her to this windmill. And she, like, calls upon the headless horseman to come kill Katrina. It's like, you had no problem killing two other people.
Yeah.
You're not... You wouldn't just kill Katrina, the thing standing in your way. Like, you're... That scene... that's the only part I was like, that seems kind of odd.
Yeah.
But yeah, we get the final showdown with the Headless Horseman at the windmill, a lot of Universal movies. That shit always happens at the windmill, and it looks great in the setting, like when they're showing it. It's very, it's both comical and it's interesting. Like, Johnny Depp is obviously just very inept, but he keeps using, like, his logic and smarts to try and outsmart the thing. And he kind of gets lucky, a lot of lucky breaks on getting saved from the horseman. But it all concludes when Depp finds the head that Katrina's stepmom was carrying and, like, kind of like a football, tosses it over.
Yeah. Well, this is right as the horseman gets Katrina, like, has her hair yanked back, her neck's exposed, and he has, you know, his axe high above his head, like, seconds away from chopping it off. And that's when Ichabod has the head and is like, hey, do you want this? And basically throws it at him. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he lets Katrina go. So you can explain the last scene.
So it's definitely CG. I can't tell if it's aged well or not, but it looks absolutely goofy, like a lot of Tim Burton things. As the skin, the muscles, the tendons are reattaching the head. And there's moments where it's like bulgy, poppy, cartoony eyes. And the skeleton just looks crazy until finally it like turns away and boom, there's Christopher Walken again. So you're kind of like sitting there like, oh shit, like there's a stare down. Like he's got his head. Is he okay now? And he just kind of decides, he's like, all right, I'm going to leave you guys alone. But he goes over to, what's the mother's name again? The stepmother? I can't even remember. But yeah, he goes over to the stepmother, picks her up, puts her on the horse. And in definitely one of my top five favorite scenes, she wakes up, she looks up, and there's Christopher Walken. And he has that goddamn look with the teeth. And it looks terrifying. But the look on his face is kind of like, yeah, you're mine now. And he goes in for a kiss, like biting her. There's blood coming out. It's just a like wow scene. And then where do they go?
Into the tree.
Yeah, like they straight up jump in with the horse kicking back blood. So he essentially drags her to hell with him to be his whatever. Even though she deserves it, I still am like, that's kind of rough.
That is rough.
Like,
yeah.
Like he's. Ooh, like that's gonna be a rough afterlife for
pretty
her.
Much, yeah.
Like that's, like you said, I mean, she shouldn't have killed all those people, but I'm not like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like that's, I don't know. But yeah, but then as soon as that's done, next scene, cinematography, the settings, everything's much brighter once again. The trees have color again, and then they end up back in New York. I mean, everything's bright, and Katrina is sporting a very Beetlejuice, Jack Skeleton-esque pinstripe dress, which is, once again, I have to be sure, but I'm sure there's almost like a pinstripe in almost all of his movies.
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, and that basically, it wraps it up. So, I mean, did you see this in the theaters when it came out?
I did not, no.
I definitely did. And it was that's one of the ones where it had an impression on me because I was in seventh grade, so you were probably in college by then.
Shut up. I am 2 years old there.
So what are you grading this guy?
Oh, this is kind of hard. I'm going to say a B+.
Hmm. Okay. I'm going at the A, and I know that seems high. But I realized after we watched it, like, every October, this is a one of those I need to watch.
Yeah.
I do like Johnny Depp's performance. I like that it's overacted, but it's silly. Like, it's silly fun. Like, I don't take anything about serious. And every time we've watched, like, you just pointed out something now I'm going to see next time, which is the lightning coming every time.
Yeah.
I notice little things in the scenery every time I watch this. I never get tired of it. And I know the plot. We've obviously talked about my issues, but I love this movie. I can't get tired of watching.
I do love this movie. My only issue is with all the names and the crazy trying to figure out who's who and, like, you know what I mean? It's just, it's a lot. But,
yeah.
Nice. It is very enjoyable.
Yeah. So this one, easy to say, We both highly, highly recommend it. And it does get you in that perfect Halloween mood. So, probably still one of the most underrated Tim Burton films, yeah, in my opinion. All right, so you got me on the edge of my seat since you made me wait. What is the myth for this week?
Okay, so we had the Headless Horseman.
So we're doing the Headless Horseman.
Shut up. So we had the Headless Horseman in Sleepy Hollow. Well, apparently in Ireland, there's a creature called the Dullahan.
Hmm.
The Dullahan is also called the Gan Sian, which means...
I'm sure you said that right.
Probably. Without a head.
So it's a headless...
It is a headless horseman.
Is he on a horse?
He is on a horse.
So it's a headless horseman.
It's a headless horseman. All right. Yep, it's a headless horseman.
Yeah. It's the Irish.
It's headless, the Irish, yeah. So he is a type of mythological creature in Irish folklore. And I have seen that he's, like, referred to in the fairy realm. So he's, like, a fairy, pretty much.
Yeah, and that had me interested, and I asked you this, not to tie back too much Headless Horseman. I never understood, like, is he supposed to be a demon, a ghost?
Like, so, we'll get into that, because there's some other stuff. But, yeah, so this does come from Ireland.
Ireland.
Ireland. So, the ancient Irish believed where the Dullahan stopped riding, a person was going to die.
Okay.
So he's more, not necessarily like a death bringer.
Like an
I
omen?
I would actually say you'll see once I get a little bit more into them. Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds more like he's like a grim reaper. Kind
okay.
of.
That makes
All
sense.
Right?
Yeah.
So now wherever he stops riding, someone's going to die. He actually calls out the person's name, drawing away their soul.
How the hell is he doing? He hasn't got a head.
We'll get into that.
Okay.
Yeah. And at this point, basically, the victims drop dead. Like, there's no escaping it. Mm. Like, when your name is called, that's it. It's up. Like, and that's what reminded me of, like, the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Like, your time's up. Like, that's it. So his head is actually detached from his body. And he actually carries it with him.
Hmm.
So, you know, he rides on the horse and everything like that, but he does have his head with him, like, at all times, pretty much. And they describe it as, like, the mouth has, like, a hideous grin, like, ear to ear. His eyes are constantly darting back and forth, looking for victims. But he does possess supernatural sight. And actually, sometimes they portray him as holding, like, the head up high.
Yeah.
So that way he can see for great distances, even in the darkness. And he can spy the house of a dying person, like, no matter where it is. So, and sometimes if, you know, he's not holding his head high, he just kind of has it tucked under his arm or, you know, things like that.
In his satchel. His man purse.
His man. So they describe, like, his complexion, like, the flesh has the color and consistency of moldy cheese. And actually, like, I have seen that it kind of possibly smells that way as well. Kind of gross.
I mean, here's the deal. In theory, if he's anywhere near you, you're probably already dead.
Yeah.
Because he's going to call your name.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And then they said, like, his head glows with a phosphorescence of decaying matter that actually kind of lights it almost like a lantern.
It's almost like a jack-o'-lantern.
Pretty much. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he wears, like, this is what makes me think of a reaper, is that he wears, like, a long black flowing cloak.
Okay.
You know what I mean? As he rides. And he also carries a human spine as a whip that he uses.
Damn.
Yeah. So, and the reason for the whip is if you look at him, like, so people, like, if people, like, kind of look out the windows and, like, spy him, he basically blinds them. So,
damn.
With the whip. So, well, they either with the whip or by throwing blood in their eyes. Yeah. So, like, you can't look upon him.
Shit.
Yeah. And he's portrayed either on the back of a black horse, which is said to either be headless as well, or if it does have a head, fire radiates from, like, its nostrils. So
that's, I mean, it, yeah. And I know you'll probably get to it, but that in theory is almost a direct representation of the how the horse is always described for the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
As a black steed with flames or smoke and stuff coming like that. From its, yeah.
So, and it depends on like what like area you're from, because you know, most areas they depict him as just on a horse, but they also some places believe that he rides on a black carriage pulled by 6 horses. And it's known as the Coach a Bower. I think I'm saying that right.
Okay.
Which comes from the Irish, I'm not going to say this right, Coatsdy Botar.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm yeah, sure. yeah. Which means deaf or silent coach. And it's adorned with candles, like inside of skulls. So, like, kind of like a jack-o'-lantern, but with skulls.
Sounds like an old school hearse.
Yeah. And the spokes of the wheels are made out of femur bones, and the wagon is covered with worn chewed pall, which is like a covering that like they put over caskets and things.
Okay.
Or dried human skin.
Damn, so he's yeah. riding style. He's kind of yeah. like the thing from Jeepers Creepers, all pimping
yeah,
out
yeah,
his
yeah,
ride.
Yeah, 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 kind of. And apparently, like, the horses travel so fast, like, down the roads that it actually ignites fires in the shrubs, like,
okay.
as they go by. So kind of like, what was that movie with Nicolas Cage? Ghost Rider.
Oh, did you just say that?
I did say Ghost Rider.
You could have said many.
Oh, I'm going to make you watch that movie.
That's
oh,
not
just
a
wait.
Horror movie. That's
it's kind of.
That is a superhero movie, and I bet you didn't
it's
even...
not a superhero
That is a
movie.
Marvel superhero.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it
Whatever.
Is.
Whatever.
God.
I love Nicolas Cage. And apparently whenever he is near like a house, the locks and like the doors just open by themselves. So like there's no locking him out.
Yeah.
Like once he's there, that's it. There's no escaping him. And it says once the death coach has come to earth, it cannot return unemptied. So
like you said, he is a version of a Reaper. I mean, he's supernaturally crazy powerful, blinds motherfuckers with
yeah.
crazy stuff. And yeah, it sounds like there's no avoiding. I mean,
no.
the point is there's no avoiding.
There's no avoiding death, yeah. And he has limited speech. You know, obviously he doesn't have a head. But he is allowed to speak once per journey. And it's just to call the name of the person that he's taking their soul.
Wonder like if he sneezes if that counts. Gotta, oh shit.
So the only thing that can frighten him away is apparently golds. They say that you carry gold in your pocket and you throw it before him on the ground, and the horse will stop in its tracks and flee in the opposite direction.
Damn! So you gotta catch a leprechaun, steal his gold, and then fight. You got some work to do.
So he's similar, like similar to like a banshee, like they're both from
yep.
the fairy realm, both signify death, whereas the banshee just kind of warns of a death, like that's a death omen, like you hear the,
yeah.
you know, when the banshee screams,
someone's
going to die. But the Doolahan is the one actually taking the soul, like a Grim Reaper.
Gotcha. So,
yeah.
I mean, when they pick though, does he... Is it just it's someone's time, or is he picking people for a particular
They
reason?
Don't really say. Like, they're like, you know, just when, you know, you die when it happens. So either he stops in front of your house and calls your name, or it could literally be, like, stopped in the middle of the road and then, like, someone just dies right there.
Gotcha.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Like, they don't really get into how these names are picked. Like, maybe it's just your time's up, that's it, just
gotcha.
Fate. Yeah. So like there's many stories like depicting like where he came from. So there are some stories that suggest that he was a soldier and his head was taken in battle and he's just constantly roaming searching for his head. Another one is that he suggests that he already has his head, but he's just so bitter from his own death that he just wants to take souls with him to the afterlife, just, you know, to be miserable. But some actually say he's believed to be the embodiment of an ancient Celtic god of fertility named Crumdum.
Okay.
Crumdum. So apparently King Tigermas long ago worshipped Crumpdom and made human sacrifices. And basically this god demanded sacrifices every year, and the preferred method was decapitation.
Okay.
And when Christian missionaries arrived in, you know, in the area, they, you know, denounced all worship and all sacrificial religions, kind of, you know.
Getting rid of all the pagans.
Yeah, pretty much. And Crubdub was being denied of his annual sacrifices of souls, and he actually took physical form.
So it's basically like American Gods.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Great show. Can't wait for that to come back.
Yeah.
And that leprechaun's alive. I know he is. I hope he is.
You just think he's hot. That's all it is.
But
is it another great example? At first you were like,
No.
You did not like his face.
I do like his face.
You don't. You goddamn liar.
That is Liv Schreiber's brother.
If he didn't have abs, you would not like his face.
Oh, he's amazing abs.
But go on.
Anyway. So the ancient Celts believed that the soul was actually in the head. And if, you know, they were in battle and their foe was worthy, that the heads would actually be taken and added to the warrior's collection. And they
also...
actually
why when you say, when you sneeze, you say bless you, because it keeps your soul in your body.
Huh.
I just made that up.
Yeah, I think, I think it's more so that, you know, back in the day, people would die from the common cold. Yeah. So they're blessing you so you
just
don't die.
Just take my funny little...
I love you. And they also believed that if you took the head of your foe and actually attached it to like a pike and put it outside of your house, that it would scream and warn of like your enemies, like if your enemies were near. Yeah. So, and actually to tie this back, you know, obviously it is a headless horseman, but Washington Irving's family actually came from Scotland. So they would
plausible.
Have heard of the Headless Horseman.
Of Doolahan, you mean?
Well, yeah,
yeah,
that's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very, very likely. And a lot of those Celtic, I mean, Celtic culture spread from France, Germany, to Ireland, to Scotland, like all through the UK, obviously. So it's definitely possible. But yeah, that seems like a very early example. I'm curious the timeline of how actually old that was.
Yeah, well, like I said, they were saying like when the Christians came in, so
sure, that's probably when it started getting recorded, because Christians were starting to probably take note of it back then, and it was handed down from generation to generation. But sure, I think that is a very likely, so yeah, we got us a different headless horseman.
Yeah, so
I think I'd rather deal with our headless horseman than that one.
Yeah.
I don't want to be blinded with a goddamn human spine. That like, I mean, if you're going to pick, it's like, I guess throw the blood in my eyes. Like, I don't want to be hit with a goddamn spinal cord. Ow. That's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Nice. Good pick.
Yeah. So, now, for my spooky place, I was kind of going back and forth. You know, it took me a while. And then last minute, I finally figured it out. Like, I was initially like, well, maybe I'll go back to find some place in New York that's haunted, or, you know, something like that. But I ultimately decided on the Tower of London.
That's in Spain, right?
I'm bad at geography, and I even know that's incorrect.
What's great is I know I could have just convinced you, like, you're talking about the one. I absolutely know I could have just tricked you there.
So, all right. So before I get into exactly how this is connected, let me just give you a quick little overview of the Tower of London.
Please
so
do.
It's a historic castle on the northern bank of the River Thames in central London. So it was built in 1066, and the White Tower is like the main tower, was built by William the Conqueror in 1078. The castle was used as a prison from 1100 to 1952.
Damn.
Yeah. So early on, the palace was actually a royal residence, among other things. Like, they have it's one big area with a bunch of different buildings and towers and things like that. But the decline of the tower being used as a residence was around the Tudor period, which was like the 16th century.
Yeah.
And the tower is a, you know, like I said, a complex series of buildings, and it has two defensive walls, and it has a moat.
Oh yeah, it's a
That's
castle.
awesome.
You can't have a castle without a moat.
A moat is awesome. I want one. Can we build one around the house?
No. You don't even help me take care of the pool. You ain't gonna help me take care of a goddamn moat.
You just gotta throw some crocodiles in there.
Oh, is that it? Who's feeding them bastards?
And it's one of the city's most popular tourist attractions and also the most haunted. So this is definitely one of the places that we have to add to the list that I really want to go see.
Okay.
So,
weirdo. I love
but
you.
you love
I do.
me. So the castle has seen an abundance of tortures, executions, and murders and stuff like that, like in its long history that it's been
Sure,
around.
you can't have a castle without
Yeah.
torturing.
And the most common forms of torture were the rack, the scavenger's daughter, and manacles was like in their torture room.
Shame they didn't say Iron Maidens and we could have tied it directly.
Yeah. But there is a tie-in.
Okay.
I'll get there. So there's many, many ghosts that have been said to inhabit the tower. There's been reports of strange smells, like rooms being icy cold, poltergeists, and even death heralding bears.
Wait, what?
Bears, yeah. Rawr, grizzly
No,
bears.
I get that,
Yeah.
but death heralding, as
That's.
in, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you and I have said so far from the train station at first one, and we've talked about in general, depending on your belief
Yeah.
of the afterlife, whatever, if a place like this, and you said, you know, was really used as a prison from 1100 to 9, that's like 800 some odd years of who knows how many countless, very agonizing deaths people
Yeah.
went through. So if being a ghost means your energy is left over, then yeah, it makes sense that
Yeah.
place was probably pretty
Pretty
haunted.
haunted. All right. So now I'm actually going to get into some of the spirits that inhabit the Tower of London.
Go on.
So, in 1483, two young princes were murdered
Okay.
within the castle. Now, they never found out what happened. They never pinpointed who did it. They just know these two young princes were murdered. So there has been seen like shadowy figures of two lost boys actually holding hands.
Was it Michael and David?
There's also been like a specter of a woman in either white or black dress,
La
like
Llorona?
got yeah, woman in white. And whenever she's seen like out of the corner of your eye or something like that, like you get this putrid smell of like old lady perfume. So, you
Okay.
know, she's one of the ones that's there. People feel like chills down their spine. People have felt like tapping on the shoulder, things like that. So, one of the things that's housed there is the armor of Henry VIII. So, people describe like when they're in the room with his armor that they have this strange, like, crushing feeling, or that someone's strangling them. And like, people have described it as like a demon literally just like jumped off the ceiling and wrapped their arms around their body and just squeezed as tightly as they could. And there's been several accounts of this, and it's always in the room where Henry VIII's armor is. And they've actually moved it several times to
Yeah.
different rooms, and wherever that is, that's the room that you get this strange sensation.
I wonder that if that's psychosomatic, like if you read those facts and you go and see it, like if all of a sudden, like you're just like, ooh, feel, ooh, maybe like maybe it's like you're creating a mini panic attack in
Yeah,
yourself.
maybe.
But no, it's interesting. Okay.
Okay, so now here is where I tie it to everything else.
Okay.
The most famous ghostly figure in the Tower of London is the ghost of Anne Boleyn. So Anne Boleyn was the wife of Henry VIII,
One of them.
one of them, yes, who was charged with adultery, incest, and conspiracy against the king.
How dare she?
Yes. Now, in 1536, she was decapitated
That was his style.
in a tower. So we have headless horseman, headless
Decapitation.
ghost.
Okay.
And she has been spotted in many different parts of the tower. And sometimes they just see like her headless.
How can you tell it's her if she's headless?
Really?
It's an honest question.
Right? So sometimes they see her, you know, headless torso wandering around. Other times they actually see her carrying her head.
Like the Doulahan.
Like the Doulahan. There you go. Full circle.
It's a circle.
It's a circle. But she's actually seen in different parts of the tower, inside the building as well as outside on the tower green. And, you know, it wanders around at night and is most frequently seen at the Chapel of St. Peter, which is where she was buried after her execution.
Gotcha.
And also they had, like, all types of exotic animals apparently, imprisoned there during the Tudor times. So people have seen, like, galloping ghost horses and, you know, the bear that's apparently a death harbinger. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, it does say there was, like, there's an area a little bit.
So they had all these exotic animals. I mean, are you basically trying to tell me that Henry VIII was, like, Joe Exotic?
It did say he had a zoo. Yes, well. He did. Fucking Carol Baskins.
It's that bitch Anne Boleyn.
But here's the thing, you know, he gets rid of his wife. It's kind of funny, though, that, you know, if Henry VIII's ghost actually is in the tower.
He's
stuck with her forever. So that's kind of poetic.
Yeah, it is.
So there was an area, like, I guess where they did the public executions, which I did see that, like, over, like, a 400-year span, they did do 112 public executions.
Okay.
But there was only 7 executions at the Tower Green on the premises.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're saying Anne Boleyn being the most famous from her stature, but is she the most commonly quote-unquote seen?
Yes.
So,
okay. Yeah.
So it's no one sees Henry VIII. They just feel that crushing.
They feel the crushing. Yeah.
The random princes, you maybe see, like you said.
Yeah.
But like she's said, like, the main.
She's the main one.
Main one. Yeah. Okay.
I could, and she was executed on site.
On site. Okay.
But they said, like, there's been quite a few people, like, tortured and, like, there's been murders and stuff like that. But as actual, like, executions, the one thing I saw, I forget the girl's name, basically, she was going to be executed and she refused to put, like, her head on the chopping block and actually ran from the executioner, like, tried to run to, like, the king to, like, plea for mercy, figuring, oh, like, he'll pardon me if I talk to him. And he was just kind of like, eh. But then the executioner just kind of chased after her and just chopped her to bits. So,
ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
So there's been a lot of things going on there that's, you know.
So it's it's a real, not many good things happen there.
No.
Once again, if you believe that, then it makes sense for it to be, I guess, if it's so concentrated, if it is probably the highest number of executions in London or in that area, then it would make sense for it to be the most haunted. I never knew any of that about the Tower of London, to be honest. So that is, and you said they still do, like, tours of that?
They do tours,
Do they use that tower, though, for anything other than tours, or is it, like, abandoned?
I don't know if it's abandoned, but, like, they, because there were there's, like, several different, like, little buildings and stuff like that. Like I said, like, at one point, like I said, it was used as a residence, but, you know, that declined. Sure. And they did, like, munitions and, like, armory and things like that in there.
They might use it for auxiliary, but...
Yeah.
Doubtful anyone's actually living there.
Yeah.
But
probably not. Like, it's probably more touristy now.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, they do have, like, the church there and everything like that. So.
Nice. All right. I see how you brought it around.
Yeah.
That's a good one. You had some good picks this week. I like it. So, yeah. I mean, next week is my pick. And the week after is obviously Monica's again.
And I'm excited. I already know exactly what I'm doing. And it's all Halloween.
Yeah. And just a heads up, because we both love Halloween so much, and there's literally so many movies that you could connect with Halloween, the next 2 weeks will be very Halloween heavy. I'll say that. So Monica has her things picked. I'll pick probably things, myths and places tied to Halloween as well. And my movie definitely is. So with that, guys, we want to say, first of all, if you're sticking with us, thank you. Please make sure you subscribe. If you haven't already, give us a rating. If you can, give us a 5, even if you want to blast us in the comments. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Spotify, Stitcher, basically anywhere you have social media. So we'd really appreciate any support. And with that, we want to say good night.
And until next time.